Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
G'day, everybody, and welcome to the Draft Doctors. I'm John Crockett. The grand final has been run and won by the West Coast Eagles. Congratulations to them. Suck eggs to all you Collingwood fans who thought it was in the bag, being arrogant on social media, but you were gracious in defeat. Being a Collingwood supporter himself, we welcome to you, Stevie Fizz. How you feeling?
Hashtag Bucks out. Get out of here, you loser. No, it's fine. It's I think most people who know me know I'm a Collingwood fan and pretty agnostic. I try to, you know, I run the Twitter account. I'm not too hard on anyone from a team point of view. So, no, it's fine. Congratulations to West Coast. That was a ripping game of footy. Jono, you sound like you're asleep. Obviously had a big night on the Cairns again. It was pretty. We had a pretty good sesh actually on Friday. We had a dropped a few points with the legendary Doss from the Fantasy Hour, and he's probably just pantsless running through Toorak at this point in time.
He might have been on the same flight back to West Coast with the boys and getting on the cans with them over there. But no, Steve, we did have a few drinks with the boys, and I bought those four cans, and they actually put me to sleep on Saturday. They were high alcohol content, and then after the game, I thought I'd slide into a bit of Brooklyn 99 with a few bourbons, and 10 o'clock, it was lights out.
Yeah, I didn't have any drinks yesterday. I actually watched Brooklyn 99 as well, because it's just the new season's on Netflix, but I had a... I didn't actually drink at all yesterday. I had a peppermint tea, a bowl of ice cream with Ice Magic, the goat, and a bit of Brooklyn 99, and yeah, it was pretty chilled out night for the losing Fizz.
And he's got a big grin on his face. I'm not too sure if he went to the grand final, but it is the Statesman himself. Welcome to you.
9-9. The first thing I'll ask forgiveness for is for the 2018 season. Let's face facts. We talk way too much about how the game looks, where the grand final should be played, and coming to the female space, how many games we should play for. And whilst we all took the eye off the ball while we're talking about the games and let the Eagles come over here and win. So I request we keep our eye on the ball again in 2019 and ensure that can never be repeated again.
Can we maybe get the conversation started just making it the VFL again?
Well, I don't want to go to those lengths, but at the end of the day, let's broaden our horizons a little bit and let's not let them sneak over here and have success again, please.
I thought it was really weird, like people saying it should be at the home team's venue or the higher placed team's venue. I've got no problem with rotating the grand final away from the MCG, like I don't care, but to think the AFL could organise a grand final in a week, they can't organise the size of the goddamn goal square.
No, that's very true. But, I mean, also, people keep on referring to the Super Bowl that gets shared around. Do they announce the Super Bowl a week before the Super Bowl happens? Correct. Yes. It takes a major... So, do they announce the Olympics? Do they announce the Olympics 1 week before it starts? Or do they give a country 7 years to set up? It's
Well,
huge.
I think they might have given Rio a 1 week heads up from the amount of their facilities.
But can I also say, imagine how good the entertainment would be if we could just do it on 5 days' notice. We're not worried about international acts. We're just getting Barnsley and Hunters and Collectors together every year. Isn't that the way it should work?
I didn't actually watch any of the pregame entertainment, to tell you the truth. Man, it doesn't interest me.
Turn on at 2:30, I'm good.
Yep.
Fair enough.
He is somewhere in the midst of Brisbane. We welcome the third McLaughlin brother who just had to get the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah, welcome, Cam. That was
great. Hi, Cam. Cam, you dick.
Bloody Brisbane, bloody internet.
All right, let's just go anyway, boys. Yep.
forgiveness, please.
We are talking for forgiveness, please. Those players we drafted in 2018 who would take us to all that glory in winning our leagues, but somehow crapped the bed. We're looking at some players that we hope to bounce back in 2019 that might slide under the radar, get them in the later rounds, and give us some value to get back up the ladder. And I am going to kick it off with my favourite redhead. I am asking him for forgiveness from the Adelaide Crows. That is Mr. Good Personality, Tom Lynch. Had a shocking year. Had a couple of injuries. The Adelaide Crows might be all the playing of the Richmond theme song over and over and again at their boot camp or whatever the hell they had. But he dropped 10 fantasy, AFL fantasy points from last year to this year and just the 5 super coach points. And when you look at his stats, he's dropped 1 kick, 1.5 marks, and a tackle a game, as well as hitting the scoreboard. He dropped 0.5 a goal a game for the year. So there's your fantasy points right there. Tom Lynch had an ADP of 65 this year, which is a hell of a lot higher than I would have thought he would have been, considering I would like to take him around that round 12 to 13 mark, where he presents that super value as an F3, F4, but in a bit of context, he was taken in the 4th round in our Listener League redraft this year as an F1. So someone's taken him off the fact that he's going to be an F1 return there.
That's a big range. You got to be honest. Like, I think I got him in our home league in round 12, Jono. So if people are going between, well, I mean, in our Listener League was a 12-teamer, so between picks 45 and 100, like, that's a lot of range.
That is a lot of range, and just looking on how the Crows performed, you can see where the drop-off came from. In 2017, we know they made the grand final, but they were second for kicks per game, they were fifth in disposals per game, and third for the least opponent marks per game. So they had their hands on the pill a lot. And this year, next year, I'm banking on the Crows to rebound from what they had. They had a lot of injuries to their midfield stars in Rory Sloane and Brad Crouch, and Matt Crouch was out for a little bit as well. So I'll be looking at them to bounce back for 2019, sorry, but I'm not taking him in round one, but he's certainly going to present some value, especially if he is going to score you that 85, which is just about right as an F3 for me.
Yeah, I actually really like the pick, Jono. I'm with you completely. I think he's a really solid, obviously we know he's a fantastic player, plays his role really well. I think things just, nothing clicked for the Crows this year. A few injuries to some key players. Obviously had the Jake Lever departure. And isn't it funny that just one possession and one mark sort of thing can take you from being a borderline F1 to being irrelevant for fantasy. It's quite unbelievable. So I'm with you on the pick. He will go very late in a lot of drafts, I think. And I think he's going to provide a lot of value. I'm completely with you. Especially, like, thinking about if Mitch McGovern leaves, like, doesn't that sort of necessitate another goal-scoring option?
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, he dropped half a goal a game, so maybe they have more strength. They use Tom Lynch as that go-through guide as a launcher inside 50, so maybe he does get more time up forward.
Yeah, I'm completely on board. So, no. I mean, it's actually interesting because, you know, we've heard you besmirch one or two redheads in our past, so to get you on board, I mean, he must really be due for a big bounce back.
Oh, look, if I don't see him getting back to the 90s, but that 85 range is right in his wheelhouse. That's 85 to 88. It's what he's been averaging the last few years.
My biggest drama with Good Personality, Tom, is he's never played a full season. So I just wonder how much this season, with only 17 games, is going to be start to look like a trend. Have we had that little peak period of his career where it was all-consuming and all worked well? And does Adelaide need to start looking past? So he's 29 next year. Whether he's part, if they have to look at rebuilding, I know most people are expecting them to be back in the the top eight and pushing their way back to a premiership and just put a line through 2018. But if it actually works out to be the trend, do they actually start looking past him quick? So that, I think that's the nervous part of what good personality Tom could be heading to in his career. Because really, he's only had those three seasons.
And that's true, but I don't see anyone behind him who's actually taking his spot. He is that link man in that team where it's the mark, kick inside 50 to your McGovern's, your Lynch and your Walker, Jenkins and Walker. So I can't see anyone else on that Crows list who's got that same capability. And he's got the tank, like he runs all games. So if you can point someone else to me at this stage, I can't see his spot being in danger at the moment.
The fog.
Well, they're going to lose. Oh, well, maybe, yeah. That's interesting. I think I'd be pretty comfortable taking Tom Lynch in the second half of a draft.
I just think we get surprised if we actually look at his data and he's had 2 years of 21 games and 1 year of 20, and, you know, 17's his best from that. So he's been around a long time and he's only ever really put three seasons together. And he dropped away this year. So it's a bit of a worry.
Well, I think if you're battling abdominal injuries in a team that's struggling, you know, the abdominal's not a great injury to have. It's one of those ones you're not going to get rid of.
Especially when you are a running player. Yep. Absolutely. Yep.
Great. Moving on to our next pick is Steve. Who have you got there, pal?
Yeah, I've actually got a really good forward. I think Toby Green is someone who I will forgive. I really like Toby Green. I know everyone else seems to hate him, but when you're out there kung fu kicking blokes in the chops, I'm all about that life. Ugly as hell, give me that junkyard dog. So his average dropped this year to 67 Dream Team and 72 Supercoach, which is a far cry from the above 90 average we've seen in the last 2 years. And in fact, this year was his worst averaging year. I know, Statesman, we talk a lot about players who jump out of the gates and have a big banger first year. Toby Green went like 95 in his first season, which unbelievable. So he's someone we don't talk about as being a massive fantasy scorer, but he is absolutely a contested beast, which is something I always look for. Underdone preseason, we know he had the mishap kicking someone in the chops in New York, just as usual, and did miss a giant chunk of the preseason and missed a huge chunk of the season. In fact, only returning 7 home and away games with the 2 finals. But despite all this, despite being underdone, walked into the season, dropped a ton first up against your Western Bulldogs, Jono, and did drop a massive elimination final score against Sydney. Your team there, Statesman, with 125 Supercoach and 113 Supercoach. So he's knocked out multiple goals in every game except 3 this year, so that's 6 out of 9 games. Like a goal-scoring forward, that's good. So we've seen 2 elite seasons from Toby Green, and I have no reason to expect GWS won't be a good team again. I really can't envision that scenario. We know they were in injury hell this season. He wins his own ball. I love that. That's one of my things. I was sort of tossing up whether I should go Jack Billings or not. And Jack Billings can win his own ball, but not to the same level of Toby Green. He's a goal kicker. Did GWS actually have less goal kicking options next year? There's no Jonathan Patton. There's no Rory Lobb. If Dylan Scheel leaves, Tim Tirano, bit more midfield time. Good times for Toby Green. They are going to win some games. Yes, Jono.
And there's also the rumour of Will Setterfield on a trade to either Carlton or Essendon.
Well, he didn't play any games this year, so that's probably not going to hurt him.
No, but he was an option in those first couple of games he did play. He was an option in that role.
They don't call you the best host in the game for nothing, Jono. With drop-ins like that, you are...
Silver tonsils.
Oh, God. A bit of bronze.
Bronze.
Anyway, so look, I think a telling stat that this guy was playing hurt most of the year was the fact that his tackles fell from 3 a game, which is pretty damn elite for a forward, to less than 1 a game. Absolutely off a cliff. His work rate was down. that's a Trent Cotchin stat. So I've really got no beef with drafting Rory Toby Green. I think he's absolutely... it's going to be really interesting because I think he'll be one of the most talked about players in the salary cap format, depending on his price coming in. So whether he actually slides in your draft is going to be the big question. He should be an F1, i.e. a top 10 forward, but where he gets drafted is going to probably be league dependent. But I'll be really interested, and I think he's going to return a heck of a lot of value. What are your thoughts, guys?
I think Toby Green is a dead set star. Now, I say he's a dead set star. He could go in and be a starting inside midfielder in any AFL club. But because GWS have got so much talent, they've had to develop a new role for him. But he stars in that role. He is definitely a top six forward, fully fit. No doubts about that, and should be the mid to high 90 scorers in AFL fantasy, which puts him clearly in that frame. Yes, a disappointing year when it comes to injuries, but you can forgive players for those injury concerns when it becomes a constant thing. 4 or 5 years of constant injury concerns, that's when you've got to start marking the big question mark and you're taking risks. But look, this is a 1 year. It's been suspension previously. This time it's injury, but Toby Green's a gun.
Yeah, totally agree. And we finally got him on line.
It's just going to be interesting because I think there's a lot of stank around Toby Green. Like, the general footy public doesn't seem to like him, but he's a fantasy footy beast.
Oh, absolutely. And I think this is where people that are going to be successful in their draft leagues are going to forget about what the public image is and look what the scoring power is.
Yeah, I reckon your draft position is going to be real key when it comes to drafting him. Like, whether it, you know, where you go in how you try securing, that's going to be really key.
Round 3 or 4?
Well, I don't know because we don't know who's going to be listed as a forward, do we? So.
Hmm.
I think there's some really interesting arguments to be made for some guys at the top of the tree.
Yeah, true.
And he's finally joined us all the way from Brisbane. Cam, how are you doing? And who have you got for your first pick there?
Yeah, thanks, guys. How good's the internet to start things off? Sorry for struggling there to get on the pod, but doing quite well. And I'll fire in just some wisdom straight up. Does anyone know a gentleman by the name of Baron Rothschild?
No.
So Baron Rothschild was an 18th century nobleman. And he said,
I know why the Rothschild, they own the world, don't they?
They do. And so this is the first. And so he said, buy when there's blood in the streets. And so that's my going in perspective for Luke Dalhouse next year. And that's exactly why I forgive him.
You are one pathetic loser.
Yeah, it's a good Alrighty. One. So time stamp this moment because I'm going to probably rein this all over Steve for the next year. So let's just start with Mr. Dalhouse had a 79 point whatever average this year, which is garbage by his standards and garbage by, well, just okay by as far as forwards go. But I think 3 years of constant decline has sort of given him a bit of a air of disappointment through the fantasy community. And given the fact that he's likely to be traded to the Cats, whose midfield boasts, you know, Gablett, Danger, Gelwood, Kelly, Menegola, Scooter, and Statesman's favourite, Partiff, there's a lot of questions to be asked about what role he'd play if he was actually going to the Cats, and subsequently what his fantasy output would be next year. And sort of add to that, so I'm going through the negatives, by the way, if you haven't picked that up, but add to that a pretty rubbish attitude when he was criticised by Bob Murphy about his output over the last year, and you have a recipe for just complete disaster. But that's the blood in the water. That, for me, is where you're going to buy low and sell high. So it's all the negative out of the way, and all the upside is... he's going to slip in the draft next year. He's only 26. He's going to maintain his forward status. He's going to a new club for reasonable money, which means they see him as integral to their plans for the future. They're not going to give that kind of cash or the kind of cash that's being talked about to someone who they're not interested in playing every week in a good role. If you want a tagger, you pay cheap. If you want someone who's going to provide forward pressure, you pay cheap. But if you want someone who's going to be a key cog, you probably give them the amount of money that Dalhouse is going to command. I think I've got a... I'm on a roll, but I'll give you a whirl. What are you up to?
Quick question. The Western Bulldogs paid $1 million a year for Tom Boyd as a forward. He's playing ruck now, so I don't see Dalhouse's legitimate path to that midfield, because there is a bloke called Mitch Duncan in that midfield as well.
Yeah, I forgot about Mitch Duncan.
If I seriously look at what Geelong are deficient in, that's forward pressure. So as far as I'm aware, they're bringing one man in to give him forward pressure, which he is quite good at. So he's there to tackle. So he's going to be in that team in the forward line to tackle, which means he'll get a tackle or two. He may get a handball or two, and he'll get the occasional kick and the occasional goal. I can't see his score improving one iota in 2019. Ooh. Because he is not even going to get close to midfield rotation.
Wow. Okay. So let me throw this stat to you. So he's gone through 79.8 this year, AFL Fantasy, and he kicked 2 goals for the entire year from about 1 billion shots. So what do you think they're going to try and fix first? He's already got the tackling pressure. He can use the ball pretty efficiently, but his shooting and marks are down and have been cascading downwards for the last 3 years. They are going to target exactly that. Teach the kid to kick, and not only is he going to provide tackling pressure, but he'll be I don't want to say a Toby Green-esque player, but he's going to be that same role that Toby's playing at GWS. And so I think the arguments for one, whilst they're two different players, they sort of translate to the other as well. And to be fair, as far as what the bottom is, I'm only saying he's going to go better than 79.8. I think he'll get around high 80s, which for me is quite sufficient for a forward.
Sadly, I'm going to be one of those many that are real low on him next year, and I won't be picking him up as a bargain.
Same here, and I think he regresses in score as well.
Yeah, my problem with Dalhouse is that if he's not playing an inside midfield role, I don't see him scoring. You're talking about someone who's never averaged over 4 marks a game, so he really struggles to find the ball in space. Not a good kick. So if he's got a bad role, then I don't see him scoring, and I don't see the role. So, I can't forgive him at all.
See, this is the kind of blood that I'm loving in regards to blood in the water. And I'm going to pick him up super cheap in my league, and I'm going to rain it over the lot of you. It's going to be brilliant.
Well, maybe that's the good thing, is like you will get him at the back end of your draft. He is a name, so if he starts the season with a couple of bangers, you can trade him out for a good value. That would be the upside, but he's probably not someone I'm looking for personally.
The Doggies got him as a rookie-listed player and played him as that tackling forward in his first year. Averages of 67, so... yeah, he can hit the scoreboard and give you a couple of tackles, but the score build wasn't there for him in his first couple of years at the Dogs. And only got midfield time due to injury.
And I've got this sneaky suspicion that Geelong are going, this is what we need to make us win a premiership. So you're coming in for this specific role to do that. He sees its potential success there. He's obviously a little bit unhappy with the camp at the moment, but if you played at a club Jono supported, you would be unhappy too. So let's face facts. So,
got rid of Jake Stringer.
Yes.
Fuck, he won a lot of games this year, didn't he? Probably Stringer in a while.
Yeah. I even streamed him a few times.
I just don't see it being a winner for the club or him, but I'm happy to be proven wrong.
I see him as basically donuts, but worse.
Wow.
Yeah.
Boom.
That's harsh. For donuts.
Wow.
Yeah, I shouldn't have done that to donuts.
You besmirched his name. Moving on, Statesman, who have you got there for your first player for forgiveness?
Yeah, my first player is asking for forgiveness, maybe for 2 years. There's a good reason he should receive your forgiveness, and that's because he's a premiership player. He's a Rising Star winner. He's a 3 times All-Australian. He's an AFL Coach Association Champion Player of the Year Award winner. He was the AFL's leading possession winner in 2015 at a ripe age of 24. So he's only 27 now, but his last 2 seasons, he's actually been plagued with injury. In the 2016 Grand Final, he injured his knee after some contact from below his knees. No free kick was awarded for that, by the way. And that resulted in a lingering knee injury for 12 months. Working hard during the 2018 pre-season, he sustained a groin injury that ensured he was underdone, missed the rest of the pre-season, and struggled early in the season and was injury affected for the majority of it. Had a 5-week break near the end of the season, come back and was quite fit by the end of it. But his previous 5 years, 2014, he averaged 96.6 in AFL Fantasy, 101 in Supercoach. 15 was 110.8 AFL Fantasy and 113 Supercoach. 16 was 108.1 AFL Fantasy and 113 Supercoach. 94 in 2017 with 97 in Supercoach with that knee injury. But 2018, he dropped to 59 AFL Fantasy points and 60 Supercoach. So we're talking a drop of 35 points per match. But now, as we know, now you should be able to guess, it's Dan Hand we're talking about, and he's on the move to St Kilda. And surprise, surprise, on a 5-year contract. It's 4 with an option of a 5th year. His GPS data was back to his best at the end of the year. And if your club is going to offer a player up to $4 million over 5 years, we believe the contract's between $750,000 to $800,000, you'll be doing a full medical and you will understand his body. I do trust the system, although I agree it comes with some slight risk because he's been banged up the last couple of years, but certainly pretty heavily this year, but had no pre-season as we explained before. So I'm expecting a return to the mid to high 90s average next year with a real chance of actually averaging closer between the 100 and 105 return with a key role in the Saints midfield. Dan Hand, he needs your forgiveness, gentlemen.
I think he'll be obviously hot on the lips of your salary cap players, but I have a really hard time forgiving him because he still had a really plum role this year. As I've been charting out the CBAs, he was still getting plenty of time in there. Now, I couldn't think of a worse spot to go than St Kilda because we don't know what they're going to do. Think about it like this. Everyone's talking about how Jack Steele brained it at the end of this year. He's a must-have for next year. Obviously got a fantastic role.
At Geelong.
Jack Steele. Steele.
Oh, Jack Steele. Sorry. Sorry.
Sorry, Parf Tiff.
They're all Jack. They're all Jack, aren't they?
So, no, but I remember when the player who brained it at the end of the year and was a must-have the next year was Luke Dunstan.
Yes.
Right? Okay, so
yes.
I'm just looking at the midfield roles. Like, I find it hard to believe that they'd go away from Jack Steele. I really find it very hard because even if he's not going in there as a ball winner, he's going to go in there as a tagger. And I think one of the other primary midfield roles will probably go to Seb Ross. So that's going to leave some sort of weird rotation for Dan Hand. Yes, he should be better, but to what? Like, I mean, he'll be better. Like, that's just kind of a given, isn't it? Like, he can't be this bad.
No, correct.
Does what, Dan Hand get pushed to an outside role on the wing?
I reckon he'll have a split like Jack Redden.
Yeah, I actually agree, but his outside role at Sydney worked very well. It's just he couldn't perform it this year because he had groin troubles and didn't have the acceleration, also didn't have the fitness base behind him, and that's his greatest key is his endurance.
Statesman, do you reckon his knee problems are behind him? Like he actually,
it wasn't knee. It was groin this year. It was knee 2007.
Correct, but he Damn. Every time he went down this year, there were multiple times, probably through rounds 3 and 6, where he'd go down and clutch his knee. And every time it's heart and throat sort of stuff. Like, is he going to keep going or not? And then, you know, I guess he pulled through, but...
Yeah, I back the system. You do your checks and balances when you're going to sign someone up for a 5-year and spending $4 million.
This is St Kilda. Doesn't that club reek of desperation at the moment?
I think we need to let this one play out. We're talking a very high-quality player here. And we're not talking this guy just had one big year. This is the rising star winner. This is a 3-times All-Australian. This is an AFL-leading possession winner in a season.
There's never been a bad rising star winner.
Hello,
never.
Farmer.
Never. Never.
Actually, hey, we love Reece.
They've done very well at State League.
How much of this is the Sydney apologist in you?
But it's a good question. But you don't,
because this could be Dan Hand's average.
This is just too good of a player for someone to take a big punt on without them doing their research. This is too good of a player that he can't get right again. This is a professional athlete. Yes, although we knew he gave up the grog, he didn't come good. But that's been his body. This guy's a special player.
I can give him forgiveness, but he's on some very thin ice for me. All right, my second player that I'm going to ask for forgiveness, he is a fantasy pig. He is one of the all-time great fantasy scorers. That is Mr. Tom Rockliffe. I do want some forgiveness from you, sir. ADP of 25 this year, guys. That is right up there as a second pick. Certainly didn't return that value to us, averaging a lofty, 75 in Supercoach this year and 83 in AFL Fantasy. That is down from 96 in Supercoach last year and 103 in AFL Fantasy. So a massive drop of 20 and 21 points in the respective games there. Tom Rockliffe is on a big contract for a few years there at Port Adelaide. He came into the 2018 carrying some injuries. We do know he had the knee problems and then did pick up a couple of calf injuries throughout that preseason, which hampered him getting onto the park.
I think this is a banner year for Tom Rockliffe. I've been a big fan of some Port midfielders, and you all know my love for Ollie Wines. But he's like a few other players where he's just found it really hard to get more than high 60s, low 70s game time. Now, if I'm going to back one of the Port midfielders, you know, Rockliffe or Ollie Wines, I'm backing Ollie Wines in. I don't think I'm going for Tommy Rockliffe. And that's a real concern to me overall. So I just can't see where that time in the centre comes from, because that list, they've just got so many high quality midfielders, and I just don't see where that time and space for him in the midfield to get as much of the footy as everyone would like.
Well, let me continue. We saw Rockliffe's time on ground did drop down to 71% this year,
incredible.
Which is actually his worst time on ground since he started playing football.
Yep.
So look, you mentioned Ollie Wines, you got Sam Palpepper there as well in that midfield. Chad Wingard, is he at the club next year? If so, there's more time in that midfield for, I suppose, both Wines and Rockliffe. But Rockliffe is an absolute gun, and we've never seen Ollie Wines play more than, 75% time on ground? And he is only that inside midfielder. We know Rockliffe can go forward and kick goals and whatnot. So I do back Tom Rockliffe in, and especially, and this is a big if, we're not too sure on positions for next year, he's a big chance to get that forward status. And if he gets that and can average me 90, that's up there in the top 10 potentially forwards for next year.
So I think we're going to see it with Port Adelaide next year, the time on ground for the core midfielders increase, anyway. I think they were trying something a little bit different this year in regards to lowering the amount of time spent on the ground so that they can be more effective and explosive in that time that they are actually there. But it didn't work.
Don't they have to be explosive in the first place?
They do.
To be explosive in the shorter time?
They do. And I'm not saying that they necessarily weren't explosive when they were doing it. I'm saying that what the strategy probably didn't work as well as what they thought it was going to.
Sorry. My comment then was suggesting that they... I don't think they have explosive midfielders. I think they have endurance-based midfielders. So trying to make them explosive by giving them less chance doesn't expose the strength they actually have, which is supreme endurance.
Well, that's where Robbie Gray, I think, is that explosive midfielder, but we saw him play more forward time this year.
Sorry, Cam. My apologies.
No, understood now. And I think they're going to change that so that they actually make the best of those endurance midfielders in the next year and change the strategy up. So I'm not saying Rockliffe is going to go, you know, back to his 130s, but I think he could be a decent buy next year.
Yeah, look, he averages 80% time on ground when he was playing for the Brisbane Lions. So, again, I agree with Cam. I don't see big 130s, 120s, but a potential 100 to 105, I'd be looking at that. And there's going to be some great value if you can get him there as M4, M5, or even F2, if he does get that forward status. And who have you got there for your second take of asking for forgiveness?
Mine is actually Trent Cotchin from Richmond. Dropped to an average of 80 Dream Team and 89 Supercoach, where he's been at least 90-plus the last 7 years, mostly over 100 in Supercoach, but sort of more of a Supercoach player than a Dream Team player. I really like him because he's usually really solid. Like, he's not a star. Like, I'm not, you know, he's not your M1, your M2. He's more your M4, M5 guy, and I really think he should get back to that level. We obviously know Richmond have played this really low possession game plan, and that's killed Trent Cotchin because he's actually still found the same amount of contested possessions as he has in the past. It's just the uncontested possessions have dropped right off and the marks have slipped a little bit. But one thing that was really anomalous compared to the previous seasons is his goal-kicking ratio has slipped right off the charts. He's actually usually been a really reliable shot for goal, hitting in the teens most years and converting over 60% of his shots. This year, he swung completely the other way, missed most of his shots, and wasn't reliable in hitting the scoreboard. So that's something I think can bounce back. Just positive regression should bounce back to the mean for a quality player like Trent Cotchin. But I'm going to assume here that Tom Lynch, the handsomest Tom, is going to Richmond. That should change Richmond's style a little bit. I can't imagine that a good team can continue with this ultra low possession game plan. You're talking about one less small rotating player in your team. So that should impact how the team sets up and their ability to pressure. Statesman?
Yep, sorry. It's going to be interesting. There's quite a few things that we need to seriously look at with the Tigers, and the game style is right. Tom Lynch will make an impact. They will definitely change the situation with the second ruckman. So their structure has got to change there too. So I think they've got to the point where a few things that had probably a use-by date, and I think a few things have triggered the points there. So there'll be a way they change their game. It may or may not affect the scoring of some of their mids. We just need to be watching the preseason to see what happens, and I think I'll wait to see what the new game style is.
Yeah, you're talking about someone who takes so much of the CBA, so many centre bounces. It's just so unusual for a mainstay centre bounce attendant who's not a tagger / defensive player to be averaging this low. Like I said, he can still win his own ball. Again, the scoreboard not there and the uncontested possessions not there, and I think that changes. And this is where I actually really like him, is because his name has never been a fantasy superstar. So where he is right now, he's kind of on the borderline as an M7, M8. And now you're going to get him in that sort of range like you used to get Dion Prestia, because he was never out there, never averaging. And I think he can really push into that M4 range. So I think he's going to return value. Not that I'm suggesting he's going to become an M1, M2 like in his Brownlow season, but I think we've seen enough from Trent Cotchin. And again, he never misses. I love that. I really, really love that. Even if you just draft him and he becomes a bench player, that's fine.
So yeah, he's super... You are right in regards to he just... The sustainability of the guy throughout the season is very consistent every single year. And I'll tell you what's... I'm big on age. So if someone's sitting between 26 to 29, they're about to hit their prime. And I thought Cotchin was like 30 years old, but he's only 28.
Yeah, he's not that old.
He's about to
it's
fire.
It's the hair that confuses everyone.
The Mate, hair's amazing.
The hair is yeah. that of a 16-year-old, and I think the rest of us on this
I love
pod
how the two
jealous.
Guys without hair just on this pod just talk about how good Cotchin's hair is.
Mate, it's pretty good hair.
It is. I try to emulate, but geez, get nowhere near it. Any point?
Yeah, when you're doing the jokes on the pod, you try to make bits. When you're the host, you should try to host. Pro tip.
One roll,
Jono,
one roll.
Jono, I give you forgiveness. You'll bounce back next year and have a better year.
That's all right. I'll go to podcasting school and learn how to host.
Fuck, you hung out with Doss on the weekend. You should be, you know.
Oh, mate, I was just in his shadow with Doss, just the golden tonsils.
Ah, golden.
All right, moving on to the second of our people for forgiveness. Who have you got there, Cam?
So my next one, I'm going to stick with the quoting theme, and I'm going to go T.S. Eliot this time around. Only those who will risk going too far can possibly find out how far one can go. And I use that because I am going to talk about probably one of the riskier prospects going into any season that is played, and that is Brad Crouch. Every single year, pre-season, he's talked up as a massive, massive... basically, he's going to change the game for Adelaide, and every year, soft tissue injury cruels his season. But I feel like this year was a little bit of a misnomer in regards to... It wasn't really his body that let him down. It was the club and the medicos that let him down. So as you were saying, we're having some beers with Doss on the weekend, and... You know, it's the comments coming out of Adelaide are very much around, you know, they misdiagnosed his injury, which left him 8 weeks in the hole. And then after surgery, he basically couldn't make it back on the park for any time this year. And that to me is like he could have been really good this year and follow up his 105 average from last year. But he just didn't get the chance. And that's what for me sort of says, you know, I think he's got enough time between now and the start of the season to get his body right. And I think he's that 1 year of 27 average, 2017, where he averaged 105.8, which, you know, for comparison is Dane Beams this year, right? So that's elite. I forgiveness all round. Like, I'm big on midfielders who are good at using their feet as well. And Brad Crouch, in that year as well, he had, like, an amazing kick-to-handball ratio. He can find tackles. So, of his 19 games in 2017, he laid six or more tackles in 15 of them. Like, they are seriously good numbers. And, that's about it. Brad Crouch, I'm forgiveness given.
My thoughts on Brad Crouch are, I have a saying that I drop on this pod incredibly frequently, and that is your greatest ability is your availability. Brad Crouch has missed two full seasons in the last 4 years. That is giving me incredible pause, and this is the other thing, because look, we actually know Brad Crouch is a fantastic dream team scorer when he's on the park. But he actually plays, like, and we complain about Matt Crouch's game time. Brad Crouch played less game time than Matt Crouch. Like, he's never played more than 17 games in a home and away season. I know everyone loves Brad Crouch because when he plays, he scores, and that's fine. But come on, man. Like, 56 games in Christ knows how many years. Like,
yeah,
that's a lot of missed time. Like, He won't go as late as you think. He never does.
In the draft?
Yeah, never does.
He's an afterthought player.
So I think he can slip through to fifth round or sixth round. And imagine picking Beamer up at that point. You know, like that to me is pretty good value for money. But the question is whether or not you have him at the right time of the season. Right, because he's not going to play that 23 games. But if he plays the right 15 games, he is a brilliant addition to your side.
That's fine. I just have a hard time with Brad Crouch. That's all. And like, let's be honest, we've never seen him with Bryce Gibbs in the team. Well, that's less midfield time. And they've got guys like Hugh Greenwood who are contested ball animals. We just don't know.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. And I love, like, just watching you scratch your head whilst I'm talking about Brad Crouch. It's actually started to go red.
Well, it's because I'm drinking pretty
warm
heavily.
Warm in Melbourne today.
Drinking heavily. No, I don't know how anyone could... Yes, I like Brad Crouch, and yes, if I get him in the right spot, I would probably turn around to the draft room, pull my pants down and moon them going, F you all. But if I get him at... Like, if someone took him at the wrong time, I would do the same thing.
Yeah, fair point. And that, for me, is seeing the value in the sort of round six would be perfect, in my opinion.
Yeah, no forgiveness for me whatsoever. And moving on now to the Statesman last pick. Who have you got there, mate?
Before anyone else jumps on this bandwagon or... Island, it's time for the West Coast Eagles to ensure he no longer has to ask for forgiveness, because there's been plenty of false starts with this man's career. Of course, I'm talking about his Dom is good, Mr. Sheed himself. Five seasons in, and he's never played more than 20 games. And only twice over 15. His fifth season was meant to be his breakout. And you can ask many a people, including one of our greatest joint podcasters in Archie. But with the retirement of Sam Mitchell and Matthew Prittis, it should have opened him up to be in the best 22. But in 2018, we only saw 15 games. And for a mid-only... an average of 74. Well, let's be honest, that's waiver wire territory. Although his change of fortune did come with Andrew Gaff's suspension, no matter what Andrew's call is where he plays long term, surely now Dom Sheed has gained enough respect at the Eagles that now he'll be in the starting 22. The way he actually played in that grand final, especially, we can all look at the last couple of minutes, of course, when he's kicked that clutch goal. But at the end of the day, 34 possessions, and I think 17 were contested. He needs to be in that midfield rotation. Surely, if you do that on the biggest stage, you deserve to be there in the home and away. So being clearly in the top five players on the ground for your team in a premiership, then you've earned your spot in that best 22. So I think we can now say, moving into his sixth season, we can forgive Dom Sheed, and we can actually start moving on to see him to be a mid to high 90 scoring midfielder.
It's easy to forgive him with the Andrew Gaff situation. I agree. We all like him. This, the role should be there. My issue is that he's hasn't actually scored. Like, he didn't really score that well, did he? Like, if we look
no,
at...
No, he didn't. 74 is shocking.
No. Even then, like, because I was like, yes, Gaff was out. He scored better. Well, he's only had the ton in round 22 in the grand final. Right? So he hasn't really taken it. And it's really interesting because he got more centre bounce time, but he still couldn't lay a tackle, could he?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if he's playing predominantly outside, he's relying on marks, which is fine because we've seen Andrew Gaff do this. Dom Sheed isn't Andrew Gaff. So...
Oh, no. No, he's not.
No, he's not. But my, so my issue is, where does he go in the draft? Yes, I forgive him. I'll say that. Yes, I forgive him. He should be better. But my big problem is, where do you rank him? Like, that's going to be a really hard task. Like, I'll put it this way. Do you put him above
Cochin? I don't think he's ever shown that he deserves to be in anyone's fantasy team. We've all wanted him to be capable, to be good enough to be there. I think we can forgive him now and say, yes, he's actually going to be part of our draft teams from now on. He will be drafted by 99% of leagues next year for the first time in his actual career, and be deservedly so.
Hmm. But so he's not. Is he going to be a top 20 midfielder?
No, I think he's going to be. I think he's an M4. That's what I actually think he's going to be. I remember them rushing to Sheet Island after the prelim final. But remember, I made the point last week. Redden scored 70 points more than him, and they're going to Sheet Island. But he's actually going to be fantasy relevant now. He's in the best 22.
Who do you draft, Cochin or Sheed?
Sorry, who? I go Sheed.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's only now. I mean, God, I hope it doesn't happen to him again. He could be one of those players that just never get a run in the best 22, and that might be his best day of his career, and never returns. But you've got to be thinking, as coach of him, that he's in your starting 22 round one next year, uninjured, isn't he?
I think that's a fair question, though. Like, they're fair players to compare, aren't they?
I agree. Yep. Mm. I agree. I think they're perfectly good. I think Sheed is always going to have the potential to have a higher ceiling than Cochin.
No. No way. Not
tackle's going to hurt Dom Sheed. If Dom Sheed can learn to tackle, then he's got that ceiling. Otherwise, he's playing with Cochin for me.
I don't think he's got the same ceiling.
Yeah, I think, and Cochin's got the consistency as well. So it's not just the ceiling, but it's, you know, 90 every week. Whereas Sheed, I think, is going to be, for me, like, I'm happy to say Sheed is forgiven for this year, but at the same time, I wouldn't be touching him in my draft next year. I'd pick around him.
Good. I'll get a bargain.
No, I think you will, but, you know, when you're playing in our Western Australian leagues and he's dropping in round five.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
And everyone's at the draft pissed out of their heads going,
can we do that in the Listeners League this week? Just have the hashtag no Western Australias underneath. If you apply, you're Western Australian, you're out.
We've got some things kicking around with the Listener League, and we're considering a location draft. So,
cool.
Perth. We'll see. We'll see. There's a long way to play out yet, but we will see.
And I'm only joking, Western Australians. I am a ratepayer over there still.
Oh, so more property that's just popping up for the Statesman. ATO, just get onto this guy.
Can I actually tell you, owning property in WA is not a good thing right now.
Well, the mining bubble's about to burst, is it?
About to, mate.
Been burst for years.
Is it only because
the bubble's starting to grow again, I think.
You file your tax returns as Baron Statesman over there, is that?
Yes. Very good, very good. All right, that is going to wrap up the show for this week. Next week, we are talking the opposites to what we are talking about tonight. Those guys who overperform for us, who we thought were just going to be absolute rubbish, but pull one out of their ass, and let's see if they can do it again next year.
Well, I think the absolute rubbish is a bit... let's just dial it back a bit.
And to be fair, my first thought is Tom Mitchell, because if we work on the Brownlow curse, that can't be a you suck.
But how is it an overperformer, though?
He's overperformed this year. He's not going to repeat it next year.
If he regresses, then that's
wow. They're just genius call. That we should have a
great material for the You Suck show as well.
Well, we should have the opposite to the You Suck. You Star. It'll just be highlights of everything I've said all year.
Well, it was really interesting, actually. Because like I said,
parish over lunch meet, but all right.
We're having beers with Dawson. He actually brought up the idea of drafting Jack McRae over Titch next year. And
Yep.
It's fair, not that I'd do it, but it's fair. It's fair to have that discussion, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. Totally agree.
Yep, with that shoulder.
But also say that either of them are fine because you can trade them. They've got great value.
Well, my point was that Tom Mitchell had less competition.
Yes.
In his own team.
Yeah. I was certainly not touching him in salary cap early. It depended on the matchups, but with two shoulders.
We are wrapping up. Thanks for that, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Draft Doctors Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.